this is what it feels like up here. Yes, thank you, Kathy, for that wonderful introduction and for being the director of my thesis. Hi, everyone. Thanks for still being here. Thank you to all my creative writing teachers and my fellow students. I want to read you all some poems. So I'm going to start with childhood. This is called Opening the Shades. One day during recess, the second grader wandered over to an empty corner of the playground where a few thistle weeds marked the crumbling edge of tarmac. It was a sunny afternoon. He felt okay. The sandwich his mom packed for his lunch was filling and pleasant. The celery was good too. The boy sat on the edge of the pavement with his legs crossed. It felt good to have legs. He wondered how long he'd known that, but not known that he knew it. Probably for longer than he'd known what an oil tanker was. Maybe for not as long as he'd known about milk. A little breeze came up from the woods nearby, and the boy began to pick at the edge of the blacktop. It peeled up and away in pieces like a thick, heavy skin. Under the third or fourth piece, the boy found a sliver of darkness. He reached down and picked it up. It felt like a raisin there, pinched between his fingers. He looked down around him and didn't see any more bits of darkness. He looked up and didn't see anyone watching him. So he slipped the piece of darkness into the front pocket of his jeans. It felt warm against his leg. The boy thought to himself, this is the kind of thing someone could guard carefully and carry around for the rest of their lives. It'd almost be like secretly being a pirate. He decided to do just that. It was the earliest in what became a series of excellent decisions he'd make in his swashbuckling life. This is called They Were There All the Time. He drew a flock of pigeons, and they came out looking like a bunch of angels. He showed it to his zoology teacher, and his zoology teacher said, yeah, you're right, you got them wrong. He showed it to his art teacher, and his art teacher told him, nobody draws angels in this day and age, not if they want any credibility. So he showed them to his girlfriend. She licked the cherry-flavored Pop Rocks off her palms and reached for the paper. The moment she touched it, the pigeons burst into flight again. They circled her hair three times and flew off toward the sun. She smiled at him and handed back the paper. The angels were still there. And this is called Caterpillars and Grass Snakes. The children have pretty near taken this town over. No one gets the New York Times delivered to their doorstep anymore. Instead, it's that magazine with full-colored pictures of bluebirds, diagrams of beaver dams, articles about how clowns go to school, and line drawings of backyards with secret discoveries to find and circle in pencil. A badger in the barbecue grill, a blue heron in the fence slats. In the mornings, one used to hear retirees discussing tumors over their neighborly hedges. Now it's all cooing and murmurs. The word milk is tossed about with monotonous regularity. One hears, if you want to be the moo cow, then I want to be the horse. I want to be the horse. That's all there is in the town these days, moo cows, beaver dams, and cooing. We've got grown-ups lined up for miles outside of town, suitcases in hand, to get in. Another child poem. This is called The Playground Is Not For You. The sandbox is for the kids, as are the purple swings. That duck you can sit on, also for the kids. Ditto the swirly disc and the tubes you can crawl through and see girls at the other end. All for the kids. That's why this part of the park is walled off and closed with a locked gate. The wall may be only 3 feet high, but that's enough. And the iron gate has a lock that can only be opened by a kid. A secret. See, observe that group of adults, the hard-headed men with acetylene torches and full smoked glass face masks, the women behind them holding sledgehammers in their business suits and all-day support hose. The little old people in the rear fashioning figurines of the Andrews sisters out of plastic explosives. They're not going to get in either. You're right, Elizabeth. You do get thirsty up there. This is called Sword Swallowers in Transition. What we do is get together in a room and just sort of talk. We get into issues. Last week, we discussed how we felt about string theory. But really, we weren't talking about string theory at all. One man burst into tears when someone mentioned the 10th dimension. He began relating this lost memory. He was 4 years old at a carnival with his father. A man in a lion suit pranced around, his fur matted with sawdust. He smelled of stale sweat. This lion man ran up to the boy, waving his paws about. The boy burst into tears, but the lion kept at it. Probably he couldn't think of anything else to do, the sobs coming in gasping waves. His dad ran to a stall, grabbed a pirate sword, and stabbed the lion in the armpit. He fell dead at the boy's feet. A lady watching from the candy apple stand clapped. We clapped too, then elected this guy head of the group. And this is called You Take What You Can Find. When I was a child, I thought the greatest possession in the world would be a cotton candy machine. I decided that when I grew up, I'd get a job, work hard, and save up so I could own my very own. Finally, the day came. I took a sack full of money in hand, headed down to the store. It was a sunny day, and the sky was blue, which I found fitting. I had a bounce in my step. When I got to the store, I tried the door, but it wouldn't open. I had to push hard, and slowly it gave. I peeked inside. The place was packed tight with grown-ups all holding sacks of money. Everyone's eyes were bugged out wide. In the air, an overpowering scent of burnt sugar. And to put away childish things, we'll move on to young adulthood and the dating scene. This is called, in this reality, you exit at the next McDonald's for fries and a shake. Somewhere in some alternate universe, there's a reality where you do get off at the next exit just to photograph the red barn. You're not a professional, but why should you let that stop you from taking a good artsy picture now and then? Who knows, maybe you're an outsider artist and don't even know it. And even the professionals have to start somewhere. If you don't end up with a picture you can sell, at least you'll have something to show friends when they're over the house getting tanked on margaritas. It's a pleasant thing to show someone a photograph you took yourself. You watch the lines on her face soften. A smile blooms. She looks from the photo, then you, then back to the photo. And you can see in her eyes that you're somehow more than you were before. And this is called being necessary for the maintenance of the shimmy shammy. We built a hut just for the jukebox. Above it, we hung little lights on a string. At night, the girls gather there to sip iced cocktails and shake about to the music. It really is pleasant. Occasionally, the lions come down from the hills and try to crawl into the hut. We let them at first, but then they carried away one of the girls. We were all night out looking for her. Finally, she was discovered halfway down a tunnel in the side of the mountain where our god lives. So we said, no more. Now, anytime the lions come up to the hut as it twinkles and wobbles in the night, we have guys whose job it is to beat them back with big sticks. Lately, they've made a thing out of hitting the lions in time with the tunes on the jukebox. The girls seem to appreciate this. They shake themselves even more energetically. This is called looking a gift monkey's paw in the mouth. You say that as if it was a bad thing. Magical thinking has done quite a bit for people throughout the ages. Who are you to say I can't make my boss break out in measles in his sleep tonight by dunking this Han Solo doll in a cup of poppy seed dressing? Ye are ye of little faith. Me am a me of great big faith. And belief may make all the difference, even if it only hits close to the mark and his daughter comes down with chicken pox. That might be enough to keep him out of the office tomorrow. Then he wouldn't be able to notice it's my 6th sick day this month. Come on, it could work. It's either that or I've got to boot you out right now and no more tequila slammer so I can get some sleep. autumn of this last year in an independent study with Dustin Nightingale. We wrote very short poems, and I'd like to read you a couple. This is called, "Sure, you always land on your feet, but why are you always falling out of windows in the first place?" And another one, this is called, "Idle, Rich. When you're unemployed, snow is beautiful." They're very short. This is called Commemorative Desire. "When your letter came ending it for good, I was struck by the stamp on the envelope, a picture of me in my underwear, standing in front of the refrigerator in the middle of the night, my hair tousled, one hand back scratching a buttock. Inside the fridge, a few Chinese takeout boxes, a bottle of beer, a carton of eggs, and a small ceramic sculpture of the sort my mother set on the coffee table at Christmas. A Courier and Ives fantasy of a traveler's tavern at the edge of a dark forest some winter's night. Thatched roof and meager plume of wood smoke rising from the chimney. Through the frosted windows, I could just make out a room illuminated by dancing firelight. A few shabby travelers talking, holding great steaming drinks. A serving girl entered from the kitchen with more mugs on a tray, and in her eyes, I saw the fire's reflection, and my tiny self standing in my underwear, holding an envelope in my kitchen with a hungry look in my eyes." This is called "A Few Perks of the Writing Life." "One can mine for marble, or one can pick up a pen and write, 'The monument appeared out of nowhere.' Poof. The four names carved on each side are yours. You must have done something great for this town." "What town?" "Poof. That town." This is called "Single Male Seeks Someone Who'll Stay." "I opened the door to get the paper last Sunday, and there was a goose standing on the front step. It looked up at me, then took one step to the side, making room for me to pass. So I did. What else was there to do? I walked out onto the lawn, picked up the paper, and walked back to the door. When I opened it, the goose stepped inside and waddled into the living room. I stood outside holding the door. Did a goose just walk into my house? It turned a corner and went into the hallway to the bedroom. I stepped inside. I am following a goose into my house," I said out loud as I did. I walked through the living room, turned into the hall just to see the goose fly up and out through a window I had not remembered leaving open. "And then the goose flew away," I said out loud to no one. In fact, it was just at that instant that I finally realized just how empty my life was. Two more of the very short poems. This is called "In My Skull." "There's a little man in a mansion containing only one coffee table on which he's managed to stub his toe." And this is called "2 Feet." "The best feeling in the world is the feeling of walking out of a hospital." And this is called "If Only I Thought of It." "Her whole family hates smoking. She told me one day window shopping for puppies. I had one going at the time, and she said, 'My whole family really hates smoking.' I nodded and said, 'Okay.' I didn't really know what that meant, though. Did they sit around the dinner table taking turns saying, 'It's a nasty habit. Yes, a nasty habit. Such a nasty habit. Don't they have any respect for their bodies?' They must have been pretty committed. And so was Mona. And so she dumped me. Then get this. Matt says he sees her out the next night with another guy, and this one's got a cigarette in his face. I couldn't believe it when he told me. The guy was blowing smoke rings as they sat alone together at a cafe. Then he reached out, grabbed the rings, and placed them over Mona's hands like bracelets. I could have done that. And now we move on to something more settled and domestic. This is called A Little Quantum Physics Can Be Dangerous. Are you willing to live in a house with a green couch? Mona asked. Is that the sort of man that I married? Michael looked at Mona and did not reply. He knew this was one of those decisive moments that sometimes occur between two people. He didn't want to say the wrong thing and have to live the rest of his life in a universe where he'd messed up. He wanted to say the answer that would blossom inside his woman like a bouquet of daisies. Then he'd only have to visit the other universe, the wrong one, sometimes at night in his sleep. It would be a dismal place, with fear running through it like a greasy black ribbon. When he'd wake from that universe, he'd mumble that he had a nightmare, and Mona would hold him close to her bare breasts. She'd caress his hair, and he'd calm down, awake in the right universe, in a house of love. A house with a couch in it, whose color Michael couldn't for the life of him see clearly from the back of this furniture store in the soon-to-be past, gritting his teeth with the effort to decide. And this is called, I Never Intend To, How About You? I Never Intend To, How About You? It's 8 o'clock, time to plug the ladder in. I love our new ladder, the way it glows, bright blue when the juice is flowing. I agree with you, our friends are no use to us anymore. I left a message on the machine saying, beep, hello, thanks for calling the so-and-so residence, please don't do it again though, beep. Hopefully that'll do the trick. I hate being interrupted when we're watching the ladder. The way it glows there, propped up in the corner. It's like it was made to be here in our house, shining all night long, just so we can sit and watch and tell each other all the different things we imagined we'd reach if we climbed it. This is called, what? What is it you're trying to tell me? She keeps bringing home those teeth, the ones that chatter when you wind them up. Their gums are bright red, like nobody's gums in real life. I don't know where she keeps getting them from. This town used to be full of magic supply stores. Every other window downtown had collapsible top hats, inflatable doves. But that was the old days. Yet, there she is, arriving home with shopping bag after shopping bag, bursting with those chattering teeth. The living room's the only place left in the house where you can sit down without fear of getting a nip. And even after all the discussions we've had, just last night she comes home with another two bags. She sat down next to me on the sofa, wound one up, set it on her knee there between us. Then she let it go, and it started away chattering. Chatter-chatter-chatter-chatter-chatter-chatter-chatter. She looked up at me, smiling, with her eyes open, expectant. This is called Stop Doing That. I can't take you anywhere anymore. Last week we went to the opera. The next day, you wrote one. Do you have any idea how annoying that is? After our trip to Cape Canaveral, the last time I remember being truly happy, there you were, burrowed down in a pile of recycling in the backyard. 2 weeks later, a rumble woke me up in bed. Was it you bringing me the paper and my pipe? Well, no. It was you lifting off. Did you enjoy your little trip around the moon? Some of us never get to see the other side ourselves. We have to rely on other people to tell us just how dark it is. This is a short one called She Lifted Her Arms, But She Wasn't Surrendering. He keeps leaving bottles with messages for me. He doesn't finish the liquor, though, so the notes come out hopelessly smudged. I haven't understood a word he said in years. Another short one called Preparing Phoenix for Dinner. We threw open our door and it walked right into the kitchen. We threw open the oven, it stepped inside. We turned it on to 450 and we heard a cooing and murmurs. When we eat, we'll lose our tongues. Then we'll grow new tongues, better ones. This is called A Marriage Made on the Dining Room Floor. Get out of the way, said Ben to his cat. He nudged Miss Sniffles, and she shifted her bulk a few inches. They were crouched together under the table in the dining room. Made of solid oak, it was the kind of table that inspired confidence. And confidence was just what Ben and Miss Sniffles lacked when a thunderstorm shook the house. Ben's wife was used to it. After 2 years of marriage and two before that, living, as they say, in sin, she used to say that living with a man who hid under a table from thunder made her want to hide under a table herself. Ben said, "Fine, we'll make room for you, honey." She tried pointing out that oak trees are notoriously lightning prone, and so maybe hiding under an oak table in an electrical storm might not be the brightest idea. Ben said he couldn't read the encyclopedia's entry on oaks that she'd slid under the table to prove it. "There's not much light under here," he said. And so she finally gave in and accepted Ben, her husband, for the man he was, terribly resourceful in most situations, but under the table in a storm. "Scooch over," she said, crawling in after them. And together the three sang sunny day songs into the clamorous night. Just three more. This is a short one called Typical, Really. 1,000 chipmunks woke him up from a deep sleep, and he mistook them for angels, when he could simply have been amazed at 1,000 chipmunks in one place. This is called Infinite Divisibility is a Nice Idea. They didn't say where they were going, they just left. Their apartment is empty except for the word Roanoke carved into the wall above where their bed was. Also, "That's all, folks," written in nail polish below the doorknob of their front door. They left the dictionary on the floor of the kitchen. It was the damnedest thing. In between each entry, there was a tiny slit as if made with a razor blade, as if they went looking for more words in between each word in the dictionary, as if the words there already weren't nearly enough. And my last poem is one that I also wrote in the very short poem class. And it's sort of a coming of full circle. It's composed of things that my mom said to me in real life. And I'm reading it tonight from my brother Timothy. It's called On Mother. Mother on Food Technology. You tell me somebody who didn't have nothing to do sat around and made a yellow watermelon? Mother on Food Technology, driving home the point. I wouldn't eat a yellow watermelon if you paid me. Mother on Something She Saw on TV. Now, why would a dog continue to eat money when there's no taste to it? Mother on My Troubled Youth. When God was handing out patience, I was hiding behind a bush. Mother on Father and That One Nurse. From now on, if anyone looks up your butt, it's going to be a doctor or me. Mother on Other Cultures. Ange, do people in China swear? Mother on Impermanence. It's not like it's carved in wood or anything. Mother on Human Dignity. I cried when I gave my urine sample. Mother on The Things That Matter. Cripes. Life ain't worth living if you can't go have a sandwich in a restaurant now and then. Mother on Fish and Game Wardens Who Fine the Young. You should be glad the kid was fishing. Would you rather he was out robbing a bank, for Christ's sakes? Mother, on New Year's traditions, if I'm going to have a good year, it's going to come from God, not a pork roast. Mother, on that nurse again. I never thought I'd sit in bed and open my husband's butt and show some nurse. Mother, on connubial bliss with father in the room. If you want to have a happy marriage, be on the henpecked side. Mother, on gourmets at Christmas. They shouldn't eat brains on Jesus' birthday. Mother, on censorship at Christmas. They shouldn't say motherfucker on Jesus' birthday. Mother, on my brother's plan to become a hitman. You're a family man. You don't go around killing people. Mother, on elevated discourse, entomology. I'm trying to talk about bugs and you're talking about craziness. Mother, on what's wrong with the young these days. Any kid that can look at all 32 flavors of ice cream and not like any of them ought to have his head examined. Mother, on moose. How's a big animal like that going to fill up on bark? Mother, on her one blonde son. I was going to tell Joey, you know why you look like me and not your father? Because that's the night I wanted it. I was going to wait until you were 70 to tell you that. Mother, on her naivete as a 16-year-old ophidiophobic bride during a walk in the woods with father. Angelo told me all the snakes were on the other side of the mountain, and I believed him. Mother, on mystery, watching the opening credits of the Andy Griffith Show. Why does every kid who walks by a pond pick up a stone and throw it in? Thanks.